This program, brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com, is suitable for mature audiences only and may contain explicit sexual information. This is part two of a two-part podcast. If you'd like part one, you'll find it at PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Taste of Sex, guest speaker interviews on Personal Life Media. I'm your host, Beth Crittenden, here from One Taste Urban Retreat Center in San Francisco, California. We're speaking tonight with two naughty boys, JD and Dan, who are rope instructors. They're actually a rope bondage duo who lead workshops and performances. They've written a book called Two Naughty Boys, Showing You the Rope. And they do lots of other things we're going to get into just in a moment here. But before I get to that, I want to let you know about One Taste Urban Retreat Center in case you have not heard about it. We are a community-run organization where we have a practice in common called orgasmic meditation. It's a way that people can feel more, can connect more, can learn lots that there is to know about life and study it deeply and have a lot of fun in the process. So at the retreat center, we have an organic cafe, we have a massage studio, we have yoga every hour on the hour, and it's a great place to be. So come check it out if you're anywhere near San Francisco, or if you'd like to visit here, you're welcome to. Join us today on A Taste of Sex guest speaker interviews as two naughty boys, JD and Dan, dispel myths about sensual rope bondage. They'll let you know which type of rope to use and why, and also learn what you can get out of rope bondage. Why would you tie someone up? Get hints about how to get into the scene, whether you want to keep it behind closed doors or hit the road. And also just learn how to explore your kink side and do it in a safe and connected way. Hello and welcome back to A Taste of Sex guest speaker interviews on Personal Life Media. I'm your host, Beth Crittenden, here with two naughty boys. Their work has also been featured on Playboy TV's Sexcetera, and you can find them on YouTube. Just log on to youtube.com and type in Two Naughty Boys and see some of their work. Also, we talked about in the very beginning that you tie up models for photo shoots. What's that aspect of the work like?
Well, it's nice work if you can get it, although one of the reasons we are popular as riggers is that we go about it very professionally, and we don't get involved in the models that we're tying.
It sounds funner than it is.
Yeah, it's funny.
We're geeky artists. It's like, I rig quite a bit. I just did a rig last week. A lot of times people will hear about Dan and I rigging. We also rig separately. We don't necessarily rig always as two naughty boys. But they'll hear, that sounds so great. You know, oh my God, you have these models and they're so beautiful. But they're really like our sisters. We've known them, many of them, for years. I mean, the person I rigged last week, I know what her real name is. You know what I mean? Everyone has a fake name in the scene, and we meet these people when they're just coming in. And so long story short of it, it's for us really about turn on an artistic engagement, trying to sort of go with the flow of the site, trying to really accentuate the power, sensuality points of the model that we're working with, be the male or female for that matter. And really try to produce something that's a big, powerful turn on, that's going to be a big hit that week for that particular gallery space. When we're done, we usually just chat it up and part ways. There's no great love scenes, and there's no great intensity in between. Most of the time, when the actual rig is performed, I usually walk out. I usually get something to drink, I work traveling quite a bit, both with the naughty boys and other aspects of my life. So I'm usually like napping on a couch in between the rigs, which sounds so, I don't know, unsexy, but that's really what's going on.
Yeah,
another tied up model. Yeah,
seriously. Well, it's funny because we're so involved in the work. It's almost like giving massage if you're a therapist is not a is not a particularly sensual act or ever, because you have this mm-hmm. veneer of professionalism that you're doing, and that's what people like about us. And so when we're actually tying, we're focusing on the knot, making sure that it looks good,
making sure it's safe, and lifting these people off the ground sometimes.
Yeah. Exactly. And so by the time we're done, it looks like it must be a really sensual engagement when we're tying somebody up for these photo shoots. But the reality is that it's we're so focused on doing things properly and having them look good that we're not emotionally involved in it. And there are times when I'll go back and I'll look at a photo shoot that I did and go, wow, that's hot. I can't believe I can't believe I was in the room with this person. Oh, and she was like,
that's amazing.
How did you learn how to do this? How did you become an expert at it?
Well, I mean, I started out as a mountaineering instructor teaching rock climbing. And so I had a lifetime understanding of knots and the physics of them and how they worked, and eventually wound up with a kinky girlfriend who wanted to get tied up. And I go, well, I know a few knots, and I tried them out, and they work like a charm. And then it just grew from there. And the difference is that beyond the functionality of the knots, of how the engineering worked, I also appreciated the aesthetics. And it wasn't until that I ran into JD that I actually met somebody that shared the ideal that rope knot and knots don't have to just be functional, that actually look good.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, I seriously have been kinky my whole life. I mean, my first kiss, and I've said this before, but it's my first kiss was a girl tied to a tetherball pole with yarn.
Oh, that's hot.
It was very. And I was about to use her real name. Oh, her first name was Shauna. Anyway, she's still a local girl. She's still on that tetherball pole. Yeah. Basically, for me, it was just it was a fascination with bondage and restraint and slowing down the sensual process. I was a little bit hung up about sex. And so bondage was a way of slowing down my partner so that I didn't feel like my boundaries were pushed. I could set the pace. I could explore. And I felt just safe. There's a sense of safeness when I'm engaging with bondage. As I grew through middle school and high school and went through all the normal sort of awkwardness that people go through around sensuality, I eventually sort of accepted that I was into bondage rather than fight it. In my early years, I did, and sort of went with it, and then became a voracious reader, picking up any information I could on rope bondage, the history thereof, techniques that were being employed by other people. Then I started seeing sort of boundaries, and I didn't like the structure of traditional shibari style bondage. And so I broke from it because that's just kind of my nature. And I was kind of a lone wolf tire utilizing knots that weren't conventionally used in shibari style top bondage. Fascinated with flat knots because I could roll my partner face down and the knots did not dig into their flesh. And they were pretty. And that led to a skill set that led to some work in emergent websites, porn sites during the mid-90s. And in the late 90s, I met Dan. And Dan and I came up with this brilliant idea to be this low-key, approachable, very not dom, instructional duo that could teach people how to, you know, bring bondage into their life in a way that makes it available. You know, it makes it, you know, like demystified, as people have said about us.
And less threatening.
And less threatening.
Because we don't, we like to really engage and have fun, and we're very quippy and we're sort of disarming, because a lot of people go into workshops expecting them to be dominated.
Yeah.
And we're not like that at all. We try to have you have a good time.
And it's a healing cycle for us, because, or for me, I don't know about Dan, but for me, I'm being the change I wish was in the world when I was young, because I didn't have any sort of unintimidating role models. Everyone seemed way too cool for school. The doms seemed unapproachable. And so I was like, God, I wish it was just someone who was into this, who was just more like me and just casual and just, you know, lighthearted. And so then I, you know, really try to emulate being that person in life. And so for me as a teacher, it's healing to be light and casual and open. And I can see it open up things in the people that are being taught. And so in a way, it's a gift to be able to teach. You know, because it's you know, I'm a man now, though I'm not a kid anymore. And so being able to be this positive image of bondage is awesome. I'm really proud of what we've done, and I'm proud of what we've inspired, because there's a lot of people who kind of teach this way now, which is nice.
What are some misconceptions about bondage that you want to address?
Well, the probably the common thing is that a lot of people think that you have to have a sadistic mind in order to be behind that, and that's not what it is at all. I mean, a lot of times bondage is just it's a give and take exchange where you're giving a gift. It's just another set of your toolbox.
Yeah,
it's just like having a nice brush or any other device that you might use to heighten the sensuality of your partner's experience. And so it can be a very giving thing and not necessarily something where you're deriving pleasure from giving anybody pain.
Yeah, that's well spoken. Another aspect of that is darkness. You know, a lot of people, you know,
says the man in black.
Yeah, you know, but you know, black is just a color. It's just an outfit that people wear.
Share the light with everyone.
The thing that I often get is that people will make offhand comments like, "Yeah, maybe we should smack her, or maybe we should beat her, or maybe we should, you know, I'll smack her on the ass," or which is fine, but it's not bondage. Bondage is just the act of restraint. Or other people think I have to tap into my dark side. You know, like I've assisted with various community centered events and people go, "Yeah, we want to tap into darkness. And so we want to bring you in." And I'm like, I see myself as like rainbow and light. And so I don't really identify with darkness. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. This isn't dark. Like, let's turn the lights on and make this about sensuality. Let's turn the lights on and make this about connection and love and take away darkness and sinister aspects and ideas that really sort of paint us in a picture that line us up with serial killers and murderers and sadistic people. We're not. If you met me, I'm a very lighthearted person, very connected person, very open person, very community-minded person. I mean, gosh, I don't want to get too personal, but I know where One Taste all began and the people behind it and like the structure and the security that goes with the events and intentional spaces. And I don't want to give the history of the local electronic scene, but there, you know, it's really huge. And I'm a big part of that going back to like Raise the Frequency and the early years of the community and even Benchmark Forum. All of that is about sensuality, connection, and communication. And utilizing all the information I gained from those experiences, I bring that same knowledge frame into teaching bondage.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, erotic poetry reading, a companion program to life in an orgasm-based community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
What's like a peak experience story that either or both of you could share? Maybe for someone who kind of knows what you're talking about, but not entirely. Can you give some details?
A peak experience in terms of the privately tying or in a workshop? Yeah,
workshop or either one you want to share.
I have one. Let me go first.
Fire away.
A quick one is early on in our career, about 2 years into Dan and I teaching, there was a couple that came to a place called Castle Bar, which was over in Bayview. We used to teach there quite a bit in the early days. And we'd seen them about 4 times. They were a repeating couple. And the fella took me aside during a break. We used to have breaks. We used to have like 3 to 4 hour workshops. We had cookies and milk in between. We didn't have a good structure like we do now. It was great. We should probably bring it back. But he came up to me and he said, "The woman I'm with is my loving wife. I'm really connected. We are more in love than we've ever been before. The first workshop we went to, we were on the verge of a divorce. And I kind of confided that it would be great to engage in BDSM for him. That was something he wanted to do, the bondage being an aspect of that." And she said, "Wow, I wish you'd have brought this up years ago, because yeah, I'm turned on by that too. Hey, there's these two guys teaching a workshop. Let's go." And they went, and they enjoyed it so much they kept going. And I don't know how they're doing now, but at that time he said, "You need to kind of save my marriage.
If you like piña colada."
No, it's
and
like an old song from the 70s.
The rain.
But I felt really moved by that. I really did. It felt like, wow, that was my first moment of realizing that Dan and I are doing something significant for people. And it felt really good.
Next question. What are some basic terms that when people are starting to learn this, like you have this knot or this technique, or what's some of the terms that you use that people would want to know?
Well, the the way that we teach it, this isn't really going to relate much to a listener unless they do much not time, yeah. But we use a lot of use of the word bite, which is simply a fold in the rope. And that's kind of hard to, it doesn't look so great on radio, but yeah. but in terms of terms that are useful for bondage, I think one of the basic things that need to be talked about is communication.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Because one of the misconceptions people have about rope bondage is that it's a one-sided deal where one person has all the control. Yeah. Well, one of those about BDSM that most people in the public world don't know about is that it's the bottom who really has the control, because they have the power to say no. Because in a proper bondage relationship or bondage engagement, there's communication going along. That's one of the neat things about BDSM and bondage specifically, is that it's one of the very few other types of sex have more greater focus on safety, communication, and trust than
it's
rope
huge.
Bondage does.
It's all you have. Your reputation rests on it.
Yeah. So you want to give your partner mm-hmm. permission to tell you in the event that they're having a circulation loss, and that they're going to, like, if their hand starts to go numb, because you shouldn't be tying too tightly, and you should let them tell you. And a lot of times when you're tying somebody up, they want to be submissive and they won't tell you when they're suffering. And you need to open that communication both ways. And you need to be open, like JD said before, to let your ego go and loosen the knot or try something else.
Yeah, because the communication is huge. I often say, you know, people often think of the sinister aspect that you're domming someone, you're taking control of someone, but really, as Dan has already illustrated, that is not the case. We have safe words. You know, the general ones are like red means stop immediately, yellow means check in, and green means everything's good.
Blue means you're boring me.
Exactly. Beige means you're boring me. A lot of times people in like the regular straight scene will have situations in a bar where a guy's coming on too strong, or a woman is just obnoxiously drunk and throwing herself all over the place. And there is no real language to deal with that situation. In our particular scene, at any time, if anybody calls red, you stop immediately. If you don't stop immediately, the amount of social pressure you'll be getting from the community is huge. You probably will not be dating in the weeks that continue. And so I find it invigorating and inspiring how much communication is a huge part of the scene and the engagement, and how much it's enforced as a standard throughout the community. But beyond that, when you give someone the capability to tell you what they're feeling, and that's the extreme end, you know, red's the extreme end. Mostly it's just like, this is too tight, or this is too loose, or what have you. You have to give yourself permission to hear them. Because a lot of times people will say, okay, you can tell me what you're feeling, and then they say it, and then you feel wrong, or you feel like you've done something bad. And you have to sort of live into your own perfection of your own experience and go with the moment, be present to what's going on, and not be attached to perfection, which Dan and I call a form of suffering. And just be with the person, and be okay to loosen someone up, or be okay to untie someone, and not make it about your ego, and not make it about failure. Just make it about the moment and just be with it. And that connection and that love and trust is what builds a sensual relationship. It's what builds a sensual life.
And so people learn rope bondage. They start to build their sensual lives. They can take it home. They can do it behind closed doors. If they want something more than that, if they want to play with others, if you will, what are the options, at least in San Francisco?
Well, there are a lot of public dungeon play clubs that you can easily find them online. And there are places they have regular parties where you can go and meet and greet other people. And the nice thing about that is it's an opportunity not necessarily to go not expecting to play, but to go and expect to negotiate and meet and go from there.
Yeah, and there's theme parties. I mean, if you're into strict rope bondage, there are rope bondage nights, there's leather nights. And then this might be something that people are shy about too, going out into a public setting and putting yourself out there. It's hard. And so there's also online communities. There's tribe.net, which has a large percentage of San Franciscan residents. There's also just your basic, chat rooms and IM spaces that are dedicated to certain types of themes and conversations. Putting yourself out there, you know, just having conversations with people, showing up at events, showing up at parties, and just not being shy about saying what you like and what turns you on. You know, it's called flying your flag. You just kind of throw your flag out there, and you know, like if a girl, you know, throws on some leather pants and, you know, baby doll tee, and she doesn't have to knock it out the box, but, you know, she just teasingly makes some suggestive comments, and next thing you know, you're kissing. Next thing you know, you have three kids living in Brisbane. Just joking. You just got to be you and be proud of it and just put it out there.
Nice. So just a reminder also that if people want to find your schedule, your bios, photos of your work, they can visit www.naughtyboys.com. That's K-N-O-T-T-Y-B-O-Y-S. And also you can check their work out on YouTube, youtube.com.
And MySpace/2NaughtyBoys.
Yeah. Great. And the name of your book again is Two Naughty Boys Showing You the Rope. And where can people find
showing
it?
Showing You the Ropes with an N.
Plural.
Much more than one rope.
Yeah, you can purchase the book at most of your local bookstores, Barnes & Nobles, Carrie Is It, also Good Vibes, you know, whatever your local bookstore is, go walk in and ask for it. It'll be there.
Stormy Leather.
Yeah, just lots of places. Carry it. You can also get it on Amazon.com. You can get it on BarnesandNoble.com, Borders.com, anywhere they sell books.
And you can come to workshop and we can sign it for you.
You can sell one right in front of you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me here today. And
thank you.
It's been great meeting you.
Thank you, Beth.
Yes, this has been A Taste of Sex, guest speaker interviews on Personal Life Media. I'm your host, Beth Crittenden, here today with two naughty boys, JD and Dan. This was great fun. Thanks for joining us. If you would like text and transcripts of the show to find out which rope it is to get again, you can visit www.personallifemedia.com. You can also send us an email with any feedback or any other questions to onetaste@personallifemedia.com. To check out One Taste's schedule, including this lecture series or our Connect Ed workshops, visit www.onetastesf.com and tune in and turn on for the next show.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.